The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin. In Texas. Before we get into the show, fun fact, this podcast was born out of a newsletter that we started way back in 2012. People really seem to like it, and we think you will too. It's a quick hit list of 10 things we've discovered recently that we love. Everything from recipes to beauty products to books to tools to truly anything that excites us. We send it every Monday. We do take some holidays off, and it's free. Sign up at athingor2hq.com. Here's the show. Welcome to A Thing or Two, a deep dive into stuff we think more people should know about. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. To share your thoughts on this episode or anything really, leave us a voicemail at 833-632-5463 or DM us on Instagram at A Thing or Two HQ.
And join our Geneva.
Join our Geneva. You thingy mabobs.
That's officially the name.
It's official.
It's official.
And like, despite our promises, Claire, we went with the popular vote.
We did.
It was very clear that this was the winner.
Absolutely. There were some last minute write-ins. I wouldn't call it like a coordinated write-in campaign, but I appreciated that we got all forms of vote and all forms of voters. It felt like all the different types of American voters were represented in the comment section of A Thing or Two HQ for one day.
And certainly the ones that didn't show up at all. Like, that's a huge portion of the electorate in this country.
Well, a lot of people who didn't vote in the primaries, but then had a lot of complaints about what the ballot looked like for the general election.
Wow. Yeah.
But there was some self-awareness about that, at least. You know, I think people knew that their powers were limited at this point in the game.
They had to choose from the list of options.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. How quickly can we start using the abbreviation BOBS?
I think we go straight to it.
You think we go straight to it? We think.
You know, I was going to say.
You think we only use thingy-ma-bobs when people are misbehaving?
Yeah.
Like, full name.
I think BOBS is so cute.
So cute.
I think it's such a like cute little inside joke. I was going to say our audience can handle it, you know, trust our audience. But so many of them are still asking what RWI means that I just
regrettably
know that
worth it. Regrettably worth it. Regrettably.
I know we're inviting a lot of questions, but I'm prepared for it. So I think we go straight to BOBS because if you know, you know.
If you know, you know. I've always loved a bob, you know.
Got a bob haircut.
Yeah. Your hair is the closest it's been to a bob in some time. So it's the right time for this. It's the right time for this.
That's true. I trust our audience to an extent. And I think
you trust our audience as much as you trust any audience.
Yeah. And we may have to put it in our Instagram profile. BOBS equals thingy-ma-bobs equals a thing or two fan name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's
perfect.
Perfect. Just spell it out.
We have a lightning round of micro updates. I suppose we just sort of kicked it off because that was in fact a micro update.
Yep. We made it into like a 3-minute segment, Claire. Knowing us, that's micro.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay. On a recent episode, Emily Sundberg was a guest. She shared her thingies. One of her thingies was thinking about your shower as the smallest room in your house, treating it and outfitting it as such. And as soon as this came out, it seemed to coincide with a viral Instagram reel, I guess.
Yeah.
Where this woman has fully installed a shelf in her shower for a speaker and a lamp. And the lamp is like it looks like a lamp you'd have on your bedside table.
One of those little portable LED, like clearly like your plug. Obviously, she doesn't have an outlet in her shower because you can't do that. So it's like one of those little LED rechargeable ones.
But the way that I feel about it, I trust that I will thread these two together. But it for me was like having the water pick in the shower, which everybody says you should do. But you guys, then you're having to remember to take it out of the shower and recharge it constantly. And I don't want to do that.
Yes.
Somebody else in our thingies this week said showering by candlelight, which, you know, I could get down with that.
That's pretty sexy.
I don't know.
Romantic.
I guess you have to have, the candles outside of the shower. And
the candle cannot be in the shower. The outlet cannot be in the shower. Like, everything's got to be out of the shower.
Yeah.
Which, This also brought me to a place of, I think, one thing that there's no way that Emily could have foreseen this being a question or an issue, but mm-hmm. I think that there is a concern around clarifying what room the shower is.
Mm.
It is not a kitchen.
Yeah, no.
Have you been following the people eating in the shower bit?
I like caught wind of it. I don't like to say unkind things about people, but Jessica Biel is not my celebrity.
Oh, And I think this for me really hammered home the fact that she's not my celebrity and yeah. not, and like won't ever be. God, not my celebrity is like, remember when 50 Shades came out and you were like, not my Christian about what's his face?
No, Jamie Dornan is 100% my Christian.
Yeah.
No, I must true. Have said it about somebody else. Jamie Dornan is hashtag my Christian. Maybe somebody else said not my Christian. I'm yeah. Necklace Galaxine is not my haze.
Hashtag That's not for my sure. haze. That's for sure. Not my haze. And Jessica Biel, not my celebrity.
Yeah, she's not my celebrity.
Well, let me.
I need to elaborate, but yeah, she.
Let me
she
say was something.
One, yes.
Let me say something. So, Jessica Biel did a TikTok, mm-hmm. very short, like 1 minute TikTok, mm-hmm. shorter than the segment we're going to talk about it in, certainly, where she said that she eats in the shower and she eats cereal, yogurt, tea, popsicles, you know, because they're safe and easy to eat.
Like, what? It's cereal with milk in it?
Yeah. Like, and then she was like, you know, down the drain, everything drops, you're good. Okay, I want to go back to the list. Cereal, yogurt, tea, popsicles. Popsicles and tea are basically, tea is a drink, popsicles ostensibly a drink. So mm-hmm. we're putting those off. Mm-hmm. I don't understand drinking in the shower.
So this is why I didn't even get involved in this. Well, for this is not why, and as if I needed a reason. This is why I didn't watch it. Because I've never even understood, you know, people love
the shower beer.
Shower wine. It just functionally doesn't make sense to me. I'm always like, isn't the shower water getting in your drink? And that's gross.
I'm willing to give the pass on popsicles and tea as things that go down drains. Not the pass mm-hmm. on really consuming them, just the fact that they do in fact go down drains. Yogurt, mm-hmm. No.
But I'm also like, is she eating a yogurt pouch like Cam consumes?
Somehow that's sadder to me.
No, a yogurt pouch, at least I could understand. I'm like, you have like a bowl of yogurt?
A spoon.
What are you doing?
A spoon.
With a spoon?
I think like a cup, like a single serve yogurt, like a Yoplait.
This is so bleak to me. And I think part of it too is I just didn't want to imagine Jessica Biel's life, because when I imagine Jessica Biel's life, it involves being married to Justin Timberlake. So that's already bleak to me. And then to be like, on top of that, like you have
You're eating cereal in the shower.
Yeah, which is something you should talk to your therapist about, maybe.
The idea of cereal going down a shower drain. I haven't been sleeping particularly well, mm-hmm. and I'm worried that the next time I'm up at 3 a.m, that's going to be what's sending me.
You're going to be spiraling about the cereal.
Yeah, because the other thing it makes very clear, this whole conversation, is that this is the activity of someone who does not clean their own drain catch, you know? Like mm-hmm. someone else mm-hmm. is cleaning the cereal out of your shower drain.
That's mixed in with the hair.
And yogurt.
And the mold. And the yogurt. Yeah, no, it's too much. Speaking of cereal, though, you had a Lucky Charms update.
Speaking of cereal, we thought that Peeps had the market cornered on art mm-hmm. Related to marshmallows. Mm-hmm. No. Jacqueline Say, who has a company called Mad Brooklyn mm-hmm. and is a ceramicist, makes Lucky Charms sculptures.
Yeah.
You're thinking, like, what? That doesn't sound cool or interesting. Mm-hmm. And you're wrong.
Yeah.
They can be purchased individually.
They're like around $50 a pop.
Yeah. Depending okay. on the shape. Depending on the shape.
The non-marshmallow ones are cheaper. They're like $26.
That's right. You can purchase them individually or as a set of 15.
Sculptures, the set of 15 will run you $445.
You'd have to be a super fan. They're like, they look like palm size or something. They're like pretty.
Bigger than a palm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So some of them maybe are palm size, but the rainbow is bigger than a palm. The what leprechaun makes, hat, bigger than a palm.
What makes them so good is that she did the cereal. Like, she didn't just do the marshmallows. She understands that without the cereal, the marshmallows cannot pop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Aesthetically, culinarily, they're important for both.
No, it translates as Lucky Charms. I like this so much in theory. I even like it in execution. I'm trying to imagine the person who buys the full set and how they display it.
I think you've seen the AD tours of people who buy the full set.
I think I've been to the apartments of some tech bros who've made too much money too early in their lives. And yeah. And all they're missing in those apartments are the full
set. Our 15 Lucky Charm sculptures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. They could do a lot worse, I think, is
yeah,
the point.
No, that, no, oh, and they do.
They,
and
have, they have done a lot worse.
Yeah.
Do you want to start a company but have no idea where to begin? Or do you have dreams of becoming an influencer? Well, the Life with Mariana podcast is here to help. I'm Mariana Hewitt, a Los Angeles-based influencer and co-founder of the clean skincare line Summer Fridays. Each Tuesday, I'm talking to my friends from business owners, wellness experts, and more to share all of their best advice for you to live your best life. Make sure to tune in and subscribe to my podcast and follow me on Instagram at Mariana_Hewitt to see what's coming up each week so you don't miss an episode.
Going in the opposite direction of these oversized sculptures, we talked about miniatures recently having a moment. TikTok definitely overheard our conversation and they were like, but have you seen the mini backpack for your Stanley Cup?
I was convinced we were going to get away with not talking about the Stanley Cup on this podcast because like the moment it felt like it passed. Mm-hmm. But what hadn't passed is the accessories for your Stanley Cup to wear.
Yeah. So this video starts out, POV, you have a nano backpack for your Tumblr. I naively was like, what Tumblr? Of course it was a Stanley Cup. It will shock nobody that the nano backpack is Lululemon.
It will shock nobody.
The person fills it with so many mini travel toiletries, I could not believe it. There was lip gloss, perfume, mascara, concealer, mini Tic Tac tin.
Like you could be gone for a week with this mini backpack, I feel like.
Everything, and a little mirror. And you just imagine somebody, and then she attaches this koozie thing to the Stanley Cup that allows her to then attach the mini backpack. And I just imagine somebody walking into a meeting in a conference room with their massive Stanley Cup wearing this backpack. And I don't know, it really brings me a lot of joy.
I think Sephora should be making the mini backpack. Mm-hmm. I think CoverGirl should be making the mini backpack, selling it packed. Like, why not?
Yeah. No, it was packed for survival is what
for
it was.
Survival. Like it was survival lip gloss. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you've got your Stanley Cup and you've got your survival nano backpack and you're set. The other minis having a moment, which we've talked about on here before because you have sung their praises, are mini soda cans.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Somebody brought it up in our thingies last week. And then there was also an excellent tweet from this woman, Raina, who goes by Quaker Raina on X, formerly known as Twitter. Whenever I see an article about soda being bad, I'm like, right, except for the tiny cans of ginger ale, surely, which I agree.
It feels like the perfect amount.
Yeah.
It is cold the entire time.
That's
it
the never
strongest
loses cell.
Its novelty.
That's the strongest cell.
When we talked about this before, I had a bunch of tiny sodas from a party that we had. And I one day like walked out of my house with one to go run an errand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the way to the errand, you finish a soda, you get rid of it. You're like, you're not hanging on to this thing for, you're not waiting for it to get room temperature and kind of like blah. Like there's also just something to me that feels a little bit like 1950s about the experience.
In that
back
it's like
when
the amount.
Were smaller.
Back
yeah, it's like the amount of soda God intended.
Supersized everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And the little cans are 7.5 ounces. The glass Coke bottle is 8 ounces. Like, this is like.
They got it right back then. Yeah.
Right. They got it right. They got it right.
Okay.
Yeah.
A segue that is both a micro update and a transition into the section of the podcast in which you report on your recent trip to Tokyo.
I recently went to Japan. It was delightful. And there are a lot of things I have to bring back from Tokyo to share. This has been a year of many lows so far, and Japan was a real high.
Great.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Exactly. So pine berries was we discussed on this podcast, which was presented to me as like a new concept of this sort of like bleached strawberry that has like a quote pineapple-y flavor, and it had a fairy logo that Cam was very into. Mm-hmm. Will this turn me into a fairy or is it just a logo? Yeah. In Japan, these were being marketed as white strawberries. And as far as I could tell, they were not distinct from a pine berry. There could be some, like, I don't think they were. I think white strawberries are what they were.
I think you're exactly right. And I think it culturally makes sense to me that in United States were like, we got to come up with a name and a character to go along with it. In Japan, they were like, these are just white strawberries. Which culture do you think would just tell the honest truth, which is these are underripe strawberries?
Germany.
Who's going to just call?
Germany.
Yeah. Okay.
Germany. Here's the one thing I would say. Mm-hmm. Everything in Japan has a cartoon mascot. Mm-hmm. The emergency evacuation lane on the road for tsunamis has a carp. So it just felt like.
It didn't feel right to you. You felt like,
the
why
fairy, aren't they? The fairy piece didn't feel right to me. White strawberries felt right because there's an honesty in it that America can't stand. But the fairy, I thought that there would be something for the white strawberry.
But nothing.
It was also just interesting because I was in Japan in February and the beginning of March, and that's strawberry season in Japan. Mm. Strawberry season's December to May because they're like greenhouse grown. It was just fascinating. They were everywhere.
Did you have a lot of good strawberries?
I did have some good strawberries and like strawberry Sandoz and, you know, that whole situation.
Yeah. How was Miffy in Japan?
Miffy in Japan? Miffy was everywhere.
So on our last discussion of Miffy, you were talking about how well Miffy and Hello Kitty seem to get along, or at least the fandoms.
Yeah.
But upon doing research for something else, I came up with this article that was it 2010?
Yeah.
That there was a lawsuit in a Dutch court. Hello Kitty tried to introduce a bunny friend for Hello Kitty.
Kathy. Yeah.
And they were like, absolutely not. This infringes on the copyright of Miffy because they felt that she looked too close to Miffy, that Kathy was too close to Miffy.
I agree that she looked too close to Miffy.
When you go down like a Google image search of this, which is where I started, there are memes about like people like being like, Kathy, who the fuck is Kathy? Get Kathy out of here. Like the fandom's they're aware of this controversy.
I also think they couldn't have known this, of course, but I think that the name Kathy is perfectly suited to this role of being this dismissed Sanrio character.
Yeah, no,
like
that's
in a
true.
Bi Felicia or like Karen sort of way where you're
that's right.
Yeah.
Because why? Because you have Gudetama, Karopi.
Which is like, what is that?
Yeah. But Kathy is
Karopi. Like,
it makes no sense. What else was happening?
But Miffy's presence.
Yes.
So I visited Character Street in Tokyo Station. A major train station. And so Character Street is a section in the basement level of like 20, 30 shops devoted to cartoons. Mm-hmm. So there's a Pokemon shop, there's a Snoopy shop, and then there are like a slew of characters that I've never seen. New to me friends, like future friends. Sanrio was like kind of underrepresented there in general in a way that I was interested in and would like to know more if anybody has anything to say. There are other character streets around the city because Tokyo is nothing if not exhaustive. Miffy had her own shop and it was mobbed. Like Miffy was getting plenty of attention.
Good. Good.
I bought a Miffy phone charger.
Oh.
I bought Cam a Miffy bento.
Yes, and he loves it.
You
bought me a Miffy umbrella, which Cam was very confused about that it was for me and not him.
I bought myself Miffy umbrella. There was some restraint. So we visited the store when we were on our way out of Tokyo and we're like, oh shit, like we need to come back here. And so upon our return and deeper reflection around what Miffy purchases might make sense as adult people, we went back with our selects.
Okay, glad you had time to be deliberate about it.
Yeah. And so the other thing that we encountered was, and this we saw in ads around the city or in like a window, is Miffy postage stamps. And
that was extremely chic.
And these have been going on for a while. Like this is not even the first edition, but it just felt like, wow, if Miffy is on Japanese postage as a Dutch creature, like that felt even more substantial, that this is like a real like embrace.
True embrace. They've embraced it on a postage level. That's when you're ingrained in culture, for sure.
That's when you're ingrained in culture. There's also something about the Dick Bruna of it all, the like Miffy creator that has maybe helped the embrace of Miffy because there's this sense that she was created by an artist and graphic designer. Like she has this maybe design world, like esteem.
Cred.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because at a bookstore, there were like five Miffy books on like Miffy design and like the Miffy aesthetic and like Miffy art in a way that I was like, oh, this like this feels different.
Right. Okay.
There's also a florist called Flower Miffy, Dick Bruna's Atelier with Flowers, that is officially sanctioned.
Wow.
It sells orchids with Miffy painted on them.
Incredible.
And then there are the classic arrangements that they do that I need you to see. They basically use a mum from Miffy's head and then add ears and facial features. So Miffy is like fully integrated into the design of them.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Charming.
Yeah. And I think, you know, never to pit Miffy against Hello Kitty, of course, but the creator of Hello Kitty is just not like a known person in the same public facing way.
I think you're right that Dick Bruna was like considered a thing, you know, he had a moment, totally. As we would say, as an artist and a designer. Exactly. And yeah, I think that that gives, it lends a little bit of gravitas to Miffy that is harder to come by for Hello Kitty. She has to work a little harder to be taken seriously.
She has to work a little harder. She was, I looked it up and she was created by an illustrator who worked for Sanrio in the early 70s named Yuko Shimizu. She designed the first original Sanrio character, Koro-chan, a bear, who was introduced in 1973, and then Hello Kitty, who was Sanrio's most successful character, and she left Sanrio in 1976 to get married and has been working as a freelance designer ever since. So she, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I would like more on Yuko.
Yeah.
For sure.
Into that.
Other Japanese reports that I have, umbrellas.
We've talked about this before, but Japan is just light years ahead of everybody else when it comes to umbrella design and technology.
The thing that was interesting to me on this trip is that the last time I was in Japan and the time that you were in Japan was in the summer. Mm-hmm. And in that case, there were like flat fold, very small, opaque umbrellas. Mm-hmm. This time I was in Japan in like winter/spring, everyone was carrying a clear umbrella.
Interesting.
Everyone.
And you think this is seasonal, or you think this is just a trend that has evolved?
I don't know, but it seems like the opaque ones might be more like sunshade umbrellas upon further reflection.
Oh, whoa. Yes, that makes total sense.
And the clear ones are, like everyone was carrying them. It was either a full, like almost like golf umbrella or like the child's version of that.
Yeah.
With a hook. And I really appreciated the umbrellas I encountered this time. The hook was very prominent. In the Miffy umbrellas that I got us, there was a hook.
There's a hook.
Which I think
Love
is an incredible feature.
Yes. Yeah. I really like a hook. That's super interesting. I think your explanation makes sense because when I was there, there were a lot of people carrying umbrellas as sunshades and not for rain protection.
Yeah.
Parasols. Is what they're called in that context. Parasols. You also stayed at the Muji Hotel.
I did. Partially as like an experiment of just like, what will this be like?
I'm dying to know. I didn't know Muji had a hotel.
So it's on, you enter from the sixth floor of this like Muji complex in Ginza.
I did go to the Muji complex when we were there.
It like feels like Muji land, basically. Yeah. There's like a, you know, there's a coffee shop downstairs. There's a sit down cafe upstairs. Like there's a lot going on. The hotel was very nice. The rooms were very like well laid out and appointed. Mm-hmm. It was honestly less Muji forward in its like salesmanship or marketing than I would have thought.
For Muji, a little restrained.
It was restrained, exactly. Yeah. Like everything in the room was definitely Muji, but Thomas was like, I'm shocked that I'm not like lifting up this thing.
Getting a catalog.
Yeah, there's no catalog. And I'm not like lifting up this thing and seeing like floor 3, aisle 9, you know, like telling you like how to source
to buy
this.
The thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought that the hotel experience worked especially well for this brand because it is so restrained. Like you're never going to be overwhelmed by Muji and be like, oh my God, it's like way too much in the way that you would be like, if you were in a Versace hotel room or something. And in general, it did a good job of marketing Muji and like selling the brand and being like, yeah, this is chic and like together, which is like clearly the point, except for, you know, the diffuser they sell.
Yeah, I don't like that. Yeah, it's like the one thing that feels really off for me at Muji.
I agree. And they've been pushing it aggressively for like at least a decade.
Because that category has been going strong for at least a decade.
Claire,
but I'm with you.
They gave you a little bottle of oil at check-in, which clearly they like rotate out seasonally. We had like a tiny little bottle of grapefruit oil. Mm-hmm. They clearly want you to use the diffuser. So I was like, I will do it. I will participate in this thing. And the like filling up the thing of it and the having to insert
it.
Yeah. And then you have to insert the plug thing after. Mm-hmm. It was just like, it really made me be like, this is an extremely annoying product to use. And I didn't like it before, and I really don't like it now.
Yeah, I'm not a diffuser person. I'd like to be, but I'm not. I'm intrigued now about the Muji Hotel and just thinking about how different it must be from, say, the Bulgari Hotel or any of the other brand hotels. And I'm interested in somebody, I don't know who, doing a deep dive into all of this for us, like a big package.
Yes, brand hotel package.
Exactly. While you were in Tokyo, I was reading my first paranormal romance about vampires and werewolves in an
arranged
marriage.
Novel experiences for us.
Yeah.
All around.
Yeah. It felt like a good use of my time. I have famously avoided any, truly any literary works that take place outside of the human world. Yeah. And that applies to my romance consumption as well. But obviously, romanticy and like fairy porn and all of that are having such a moment that I was like, I guess I got to find out what the fuss is all about. And Allison P. Davis, who many of you will know as a New York Magazine writer, she did the Emily Henry profile for New York Mag. She's a big romance reader and fan. She was like, have you read Bride? It's really good. And I'd seen some chatter about it. So I was like, okay, this will be the one. This will be the one that I try. And it's by Allie Hazelwood, who's one of the most well-known commercially successful romance writers right now. And she does mostly contemporary romance, and she's known for these women in STEM romances.
There's a lot of like sexy lab scenes.
Sexy lab scenes. So she wrote like The Love Hypothesis. Her books, and you were the one who first told me this, they're all Raylo fanfic, which is a subgenre of fanfic based on Star Wars.
That's how deep we are into Star Wars, the Star Wars community. Yeah.
Is it Star Wars or Star Trek? I've seen more than one of the Adam Driver Star Wars movies, and he is Kylo Ren. So it's him and that girl are the inspiration. Anyway, they're all, you just imagine
as you,
Adam Driver.
As you can tell, we are experts on this.
Yeah.
On Star Wars, Raylo fan fiction, all of it.
So back to Bride. So all I know about Bride is it's by Allie Hazelwood, who's a very like easy to consume contemporary romance author who gets the tropes, who like knows the scene. If it's ever going to work for me, it's going to be this. I had seen chatter about it when it came out, and the chatter I was seeing on romance internet was, never thought I'd see the day where an Omegaverse story hits the mainstream. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I thought this was vampire werewolf romance. I thought that this was paranormal romance. I thought that was something that happened in romance and that we all accepted it. Like, what is Omegaverse? Like, why is this different? And it turns out Omegaverse is more specific than just paranormal romance. And I also should caveat this, that there's some disagreement amongst the romance community about whether or not Bride qualifies as Omegaverse. So, from Wikipedia, and you know how much we love to read Wikipedia entries.
It's a new hobby.
Wikipedia says, Omegaverse, also known as ABO, an abbreviation for Alpha Beta Omega, is a subgenre of speculative erotic fiction and originally a subgenre of erotic / fan fiction. Its premise is that a dominance hierarchy exists in humans, which are divided into dominant alphas, neutral betas, and submissive omegas. This hierarchy determines how people interact with one another in a romantic, erotic, and sexual context.
Did you ever read the New Yorker Omegaverse story?
I might have read it now that
it came out in 2020, sort of like deep pandemic.
Yeah, because there was like some plagiarism scandal around this is sounding familiar now.
Yeah.
Okay, so Faded Mates, which is like one of the biggest and best romance podcasts, did a whole episode called Omegaversity, where they invited Allie Hazelwood and Adriana Herrera on to describe to them and explain to them what the fuck the Omegaverse is. When I tell you that the Wikipedia description that I just read to you was the tip of the iceberg, I mean it. I thought that Allie Hazelwood had come up with some of the really unique parts of Bride. It turns out that these things are just tropes within the Omegaverse. So the one I will tell you, and I know some people listen to this podcast with kids in the car, so this is not appropriate for kids.
Super helpful.
There is this thing called knotting, where basically the werewolf, after he comes, his dick gets super huge so that it traps the semen inside of his mate. And it's kind of central to the plot. What is super fascinating about the Omegaverse and just in general, I think like fantasy and paranormal romance and like why it works for a lot of people. One of the things that works for a lot of people, you can do all sorts of weird shit that people would really take issue with
if it was people.
Contemporary romance, if it was humans. And you're like, well, it's a wolf and he has biological needs. So this is just how it is.
We're fine with essentialism in animals in a way that we are like appropriately not exactly. in people.
Exactly. Yeah. My like big goal with this book was to understand why people like this stuff, what works about it for them. And the first one is the most obvious, which is like romance is meant to be escapist. And there's nothing more escapist than being inside of a story that is not in the take place in the human world or with humans. And so like
we have truly, never been there ourselves.
Yeah. It is incredibly escapist. But I think specifically in romance, where people have all sorts of kinks and preferences that might not align politically with their values or their, yes. you know, ideals. Yes. To have non-humans be the ones that are expressing or engaging in these acts that might otherwise be seen as regressive or transgressive or whatever it is, I think it's easier for people to swallow.
Yeah.
No pun intended. And it kind of seems to work both ways. And I want to say, I think part of the reason people debated whether or not this book, Bride, qualifies as Omegaverse is because it really feels like it's filtered through a much more sort of like palatable mainstream version of things than I have now come to understand that the Omegaverse sort of represents.
Yeah.
And
my understanding
of the Omegaverse is kind of goes both ways. There's like a ton of like weird gender essentialism that we have largely moved past as a society, but also it's super queer and a lot of it is male on male werewolves and the males get pregnant. So now I understand why everybody was like, oh my God, I can't believe there's Omegaverse from a mainstream publisher.
Because this will be the gateway drug for people.
I think it will be the gateway drug because the Omegaverse is like a huge thing online on Wattpad and AO Archive of Our Own and all of that stuff. And all that like regressive gender dynamics or whatever are one thing, but it same goes for the like weird kinky sex smut stuff where you're like, you can get away with way weirder stuff because it's not humans. And so people are like,
well, I don't know what would turn a werewolf on. Who can say?
Yeah, exactly. I got to say, this book was a perfect gateway drug. The nodding was as surprising, I will say, as it got. Okay. Like, it's not that surprising to be like, ooh, this werewolf is turned on when the vampire drinks his blood. Like, I was like, sure, I can roll with
totally,
that.
Totally.
The Goodreads.
I read a vampire book recently that there was a lot of that just felt like, I think that's just part of vampire culture.
Yeah, I was like, I'm in. Totally. Yeah. I'd get turned on if someone was drinking my blood, probably. I don't know.
Yeah. Seems viable.
Yeah, I could see how that would work. The Goodreads reviews. I just have to read you some of them because they really delighted me. The only dog in this book was me reading it. Why did I lose my self-control when he would be protective over her? Why did I tear my pillow in half when he marked her with his scent? Why was I howling at the moon when they tied the knot? In classic Allie Hazelwood fashion, I'm served with a quirky female protagonist and an overly muscled man with obsessive tendencies. I'm 100% here for it. It totally fundamentally changed me as a person when she fed on him. I just love romance readers.
It's delightful.
Another one. Vampires and werewolves? I just know this man will be barking, growling, and purring at her. And then
You do know.
Waterwing dick aside, this was fabulous. We need more paranormal in 2024. Thank you. I like
thank you in advance of it all.
I think what I realized on my deep dive into the Omegaverse was like, whether or not the Omegaverse is for me, I love the spirit of it and the fandom around it because these people are like delightfully nuts.
Yeah. The best kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Are you going to read another Omegaverse book?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I don't think it's for me. I'm glad that I read it. I'm glad that I'm probably going to assign myself a romanticy one too to understand the fairy of it all. The thing about Omegaverse is I think that this is like the true sort of like maybe first like traditionally published Omegaverse. That's probably wrong. Someone will call me out on it. But most of it is like self-published on Kindle Unlimited or on Wattpad and Archive of Our Own. And if you want links to a bunch of them in the show notes of this Fated Mates episode, they've recommended.
There's a plethora of options. Great.
Yes. I truly think this was like a watered down Omegaverse for vanilla
folk.
For
mainstream.
Like,
yeah. Vanilla folk.
Yeah. Exactly.
HDVB readers. Yeah.
That's right. But I thought it was fun. I was glad to be introduced to the concept of the Omegaverse, which I knew nothing about. And yeah, I like contemporary romance. I like to be able to imagine myself in it and I'm not a vampire, you know? So
That we know.
The other thing I was doing while you were away was contemplating pant length and realizing that it's not my Roman Empire, it's my skinny jeans.
Yeah.
By which I mean that when so many millennial women melted the fuck down when it was formally announced that skinny jeans were no longer in, I was like, I'm fine. I'm fine.
When Joe Biden got on the podium and told us that we weren't allowed to wear them anymore.
But what's happening now is far more troubling for me personally. And that's that I'm being told that pants are not supposed to be cropped anymore. And
I agree that this is a struggle for a lot of reasons. For me, one of the primary reasons beyond aesthetic is when your pants were cropped, you didn't have to worry about what shoes you're wearing with them. You didn't have to get them tailored to a shoe height. And you know that, like, I hate nothing more than having to, like, make those decisions. Like, just, like, why make things hard for yourself? Wear cropped and then you can wear them with anything.
Yeah. You know, the one very you-like decision I have made in my life is that I basically just, like, never wear heels anymore.
Yeah.
So I have eliminated that challenge from my life for the most part. But it's still true that, like, even with a non-heel, you've got, you, if you're going to do...
There's some variety between a ballet flat and, like, a boot.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I met with Katie Anderson of Men Tailoring recently, and she does personal appointments when she has time, which is she spends all her time on sets. It's like an on set campaigns
tailor.
And she's an on-set tailor. So she's seeing all of the trends in real time, often before the rest of the world is seeing them. And one of the things I like about her is that she will share her perspective on the appropriate, you know, tailoring direction for things. And she more or less just refused to crop a certain pair of pants because she was like, that's not the look anymore. And we've talked about this before, but I have this fear of my personal style freezing at a moment in time when I, like, felt like I had landed in a good place and then never evolving past that. And I think that this is going to be that for me, where I'm like, I know that we've moved on, but I'm still wearing cropped pants. I'm still showing my ankle because I don't know. It just looks right to me.
I agree. I think an ankle looks nice in the same way that I think a wrist looks nice often. I think also because neither of us really show that much like clavicle most of the time. Mm-hmm. I need those body parts to like demonstrate that I have a body.
That is exactly how I feel. Ankles are nice. It gives you proportion and shape. And especially like what's happening now with these wide leg pants that are pooling on the ground. It's like, how does anybody know what's under there if you're not showing a little bit of ankle?
I like a wide leg pant that like hits the ground basically, or that like is like, you know, whatever. Cause I do like that look too. Mm-hmm. I have been seeing now that we're back to the dragging pant, you know, I will never in my life again have the experience of walking down the street and having the water crawl up on from a wet street up the back of your leg as your pant drags. I will never live through that again.
It was a time, and we just all accepted also that our pants were going to get frayed at the bottom from, like, stepping on them.
And Claire, not even at the actual bottom,
but just
like
the back.
An inch above the bottom, we were going to have that new hole where our, like, our foot actually was.
Yeah. Jonah Wiener also had this big piece in the New York Times Sunday Magazine last week all about pants. And this was not so much about length, but it was about the slimming and widening of men's pants that seems to be going back and forth constantly. And I mean, its relevance to this conversation is that pants are an incredibly potent source of dressing anxiety for everybody. And getting your pants
Maybe the most.
Yeah, I think that's
or at least most universal. Yeah,
I think so. And he does, you know, he illustrates this point very well that, like, it's the thing that if you get it wrong is so telling about you in some way.
Yeah.
And he's shown these pictures. It was a really compelling case, actually, of Barack Obama, like, during his first term, throwing out the White Sox first ball or something, and he's wearing total dad pants. They're really wide. They would be, and, you know, dorky windbreaker and dorky sneakers.
I can see this. I can picture it. Like a bad running shoe he's wearing. Yeah,
but it 1,000% is like straight out of the Amy Leon Dre lookbook right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then in 2019, he was in Kuala Lumpur wearing very tight, very cropped chinos that were like probably from Bonobos or something. That's the name of that line.
Yeah.
I said that so long.
Bonobos. You said it right too, because I always am like, Bonobos, it's Bonobos.
Anyways, he was wearing that and a pair of, like, they weren't all birds, but they might as well have been, but it was like just a little too late. So he got dragged for that too. And it was just like illustrating that, like, it was all in the pants, you know, and that he was always a little bit off with his timing of it. So I don't know. So one pair of jeans that Katie tailored for me, she agreed to crop one pair because it was a sort of boot cut pair. So there was that kick complete sort of vibe going, like a high sport cropped ankle. This wasn't a high sport pant, but these were jeans. And she willingly cropped those because she could agree. We could agree on that.
I have two questions, thoughts I'd like to get into with you. How does the ascendance of high sport fit into this? Because that is a cropped pant.
Yeah, no, well, it's a crop pant and I love that look. And it's part of why I like the high sport pant so much because I think it's flattering, but it's tough. I mean, the high sport thing, you can't hem those. So you just got to be the right height for them to be cropped. It's the challenge.
Yes, yes, yes. And then another question. Do we think that's at all affected by the fact that no-show socks died their death? I like really struggle with a regular sock and a crop pant. It is hard for me not to feel like Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, I don't mind it as much. I've gotten on board with it. I'm fine showing a sock. I think it's, and I mean, this is not unrelated. It's like we threw the baby out with the bathwater a little bit.
Yes.
Like we got it. We had to get rid of all of it.
Yes. I think that's my point. Yeah.
I will say that the sock thing feels relevant also because it is something where I have looked around and realized I got left behind. Where like, I didn't know that I had to be wearing a sock to cover my ankle at the gym, but everybody is. And then somebody said something about it. It was probably on TikTok. I don't know. But I was like, oh,
that's
I didn't know I had to do that. Even though I noticed everybody doing it, I didn't know. You know, this is what becoming old is being like, oh, I was dating myself and I didn't even know I was dating myself.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the problem with me with socks is back to the same thing as like having to decide what shoes you're going to wear, what height shoes you're going to wear, is I like owning cute socks. I don't like having to think about what socks I'm putting on with an outfit.
It is well, because, and then like, are you finding them? Are they clean? Can you find both of them at once? Are you digging through the sock drawer?
Are they the right weight? Does the look that I want go with the weather? It's just, it's adding a whole other layer.
It is adding a whole other layer. It is a not uncomplicated layer. I like it because I think it's cute when it works and I feel happy about that.
I think there's a core difference, but I understand.
Yes, but I don't disagree with you. So this is the other thing. I almost think I can be better about a pant that's like a little bit pooled at your foot. What I'm really going to struggle with is a pant that's just like the exact right length. That just looks so wrong to me. You know, where it's just like skimming the top of the shoe.
Yeah. That's what I have to go with. I have to do that. I just can't not do that. That's got to be the thing.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Apparently that's what's happening now.
Wait, I had one more update for you about Japan that I forgot to put in the show notes, but I'm happy to end on. You know how the tween and teens, or at least the ones I'm aware of personally, carry the like Lululemon shopping bag as like a bag, like a purse, whatever. In Japan, the equivalent of that was a like mini Dean and DeLuca tote.
Wow. Because there's still a Dean and DeLuca in Tokyo, right?
There are Dean and DeLuca, at least one, if not like three. I think three, because Tokyo, there's like rarely one of anything. I think there are like three Dean and DeLucas in Tokyo. And Claire, if I saw one Dean and DeLuca tote, I saw 15 Dean and DeLuca totes.
You know what? I applaud it. I think there's like a little bit of irony and awareness in that of like, this is this totally extinct, but at one time, incredibly relevant brand. And
I mean, I loved it. I don't think that the people carrying the bags had any of that context, but I liked that about it.
Yeah, no, it's great. They were all teens. So Dean and DeLuca's having a moment in Japanese teen culture. I'm so into that. It's great.
That's the show.
This has been a production of Dear Media, and we are so grateful to the talented team over there for helping us make this podcast happen, especially our wonderful producer, Olivia Mead. You can follow us on Instagram at athingor2hq. If you have ideas for the show or want to advertise, email podcast@athingor2hq.com. Find show notes and sign up for our newsletter at athingor2hq.com. And if you love our show, you'll also want to join our Geneva. Lots of good chatter happening there.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.